Good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Elaine and Frank with that. What's the name of this show?
First Cup.
Oh, yeah. And we're going to start with a big yawn here this morning. Listen, you know, Elaine, you know, we're both kind of like geriatrics cases. I don't know, maybe not you.
Hey, I resent that.
But I am. Okay. And the question, you know, besides checking if the other older person that you're talking to, rather, you know, in addition to checking whether they're better than room temperature, the question that you ask your spouse, your friend, or whatever, when you greet them in the morning is, how'd you sleep? How'd you sleep? Oh, geez. I tell you,
I need a better circle of friends.
Yeah, no, you're currently spouseless, but that's what do you call it? That's it. Hey, good morning, hon. How'd you sleep? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, listen, and the funny thing is, I did real good. I only got up to pee once. You know, I mean, that's, you know.
That I relate to.
Yeah,
that
this is the old time stuff.
I wouldn't discuss it. I'm Catholic. We don't discuss stuff like that. Oh. We don't discuss bodily functions or effluvia or ever being naked or anything you could do when you're naked because we just didn't discuss my age.
Oh, great movie. Great movie I watched last night.
What?
Gia with Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, she's a tremendous actor. When she's good, she's good.
And oh, she
but
is.
Wasn't that hard to watch?
Yes, it was. It was hard to watch. It was rather tragic. And you know, I got to tell you something crazy. You know, we've had some deletions here in town. You know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're not allowed to say what it is. It's a self-delusion.
Yeah. But it's you're not alive.
And,
you're not alived yourself.
Yeah, you unalived yourself. And the thing that really, man, you know, I hate to get in anybody's business. I really, really do. I mean, people should have their own, you know, should have their own space and you don't want to butt into anybody else's business. On the other hand, I find it so tragic, and I've had a couple of these self-deletions unliving themselves around me during my lifetime. And the thing is, oh my God, didn't anybody see this coming? Couldn't somebody have stepped in or something like that when they saw somebody?
But I don't know. It's such a personal. I had a dear, dear friend, and his brother did what we're talking about. And coincidentally, this guy, I think, knew Gia. But anyway, very flamboyant man. But and his brother, the whole family, very flamboyant, very successful. The brother that did this had been a very successful businessman. Then he lost a lot of money. But then he built back and gained back, he's built a better business, a different business. He was married to, I think, not a Playboy bunny, but a Play Somebody bunny or something like that. But he had a beautiful wife. And... anyway, he just had a point where he didn't want to go on. And he wrote his family loved him. To this day, they love him. And they still celebrate his birthday every year. But he wrote a letter to his mother. He sent her on a cruise. He sent her on a cruise. And then he had sent her a letter that she got when he got back. He did this while she was gone on the cruise. And he said, you did not fail me. You did not fail me. I love you. I knew you loved me. My family did not fail me. This is a choice I am making. And, you know, I've been to dinner many times with my friend and his sister and his mother, and they talked about how much they loved this guy that did this, that they've lost. But for them, it was like they were at peace with it. And one of the things that I think that helped them is they talked about it. They talk now about how much they loved him, and they talk about how they're pissed that he did that, and they wish he was still with them, but they kind of got an understanding or an acceptance of it. And I thought, my gosh, they should be the poster children for how to deal with that in a healthy way. Because I think a lot of people, when they experience that, it tears them apart. They feel some kind of guilt that they failed somehow, that this was an act
well,
that reflects
yeah,
their failure.
I mean, I feel like that. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I really, really do. And on the other hand, in one sentence, I just said that you would wish somebody would step in, you know, that you don't want to get
yeah.
people, right? That's view one. But on the total flip side, mm-hmm. that is the ultimate act of personal freedom.
Yeah, and you don't know what's going on. They may have a medical issue where they say, I'm making a choice here. You know, a lot of people with chronic traumatic encephalopathy end up making a choice because they see there is no treatment, there's no cure, the condition is progressive, and it's not a happy ending. And so they don't want to go through it. So they choose at some point when they realize the symptoms have progressed to a certain point, they choose to say, no, I'm not going forward with this. It would be like having Lou Gehrig's disease or whatever. You might make a choice to say, there is no effective treatment. I don't want to put my family through it. I don't want to go through it. You know, so it's ultimately a very personal decision. I'm not an advocate one way or another. I think the government should absolutely stay out of it. You see, in Canada and even in Oregon, you know, certain states, Oregon, I think it's legal.
In Canada. And on here's the – wow, we're discussing this, man. We got people driving off the road, turning the radio off and doing all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, we could go back to something.
Because we're depressing the hell out of them. But I have to comment about Canada. There's people that are contending – that Canada, this is sick. This is like really, really sick. That Canada is promoting their self-deletion policy.
Yes. If they decided that your treatment is expensive or you'd be a
yeah, to minimize the healthcare costs.
Yeah, isn't that fun? That's just fun. I don't know, but this is kind of dark. This is more 4 o'clock in the morning.
Well, okay, so, this is Art Bell territory, you know.
So we could go to something I think is kind
of
fun.
Let's talk about something cool.
CNN, the interview, Dana Brash's interview, interview with Camelot last night. Now, I was out last night doing something very pleasant that I'll talk about later. But so this morning, you know, when I got up, I looked at video clips of it, and I've looked at the conservative reaction to it. I haven't seen a lot of liberal reaction to it, but I don't think it was a huge disaster for her. I really don't. I think the biggest, most credible concern was that in 2019, she said she's absolutely opposed to fracking, and now she's in favor of it. In fact, she's almost, you know, drill baby drill. You know, she's just Trump-lite is what she is. But but she said in the interview that she had always been consistent about her position on that, and no, she really hasn't. But I think what we're seeing here is I actually think that these woke, crazy liberals who have this hatred and vitriol for Trump have never actually looked at his policies. And so they have no idea what his policies were. They just know they have this irrational hatred of him that was fueled by, frankly, the World Economic Forum's agenda to depopulate us. And Trump is a threat to that agenda because they can't control it. And then you have a media complicit with, you know, because the World Economic Forum, those guys actually own our media globally. So they're complicit with this agenda to demonize Trump. So nobody actually looks at what his policies were. So Kamala now has embraced a lot of Trump's policies, including stronger border walls, stronger border policies. You know, she's a candidate that for the first time in our lifetimes, she's running against herself. She's an incumbent running against the record of her and Biden. But I don't think she actually realizes it. You know, we look at it as what a hypocrite, how disingenuous. I don't think it is. I think she's clearly clueless.
Listen, they do polling.
Poll test everything.
Yeah, right. Everything's based on polls. Now.
But I mean, I don't think she has. I think that she is clueless.
I don't think she cares. I don't think she cares that she's running against herself.
I'm not going to argue with that. I agree. But I don't see her so much as a evil demon. I see her as clearly a puppet. She's an imbecile.
She's a placeholder. A placeholder for a larger for placeholder for larger decision makers.
And for whoever's pulling the strings through, whoever's been, you know, it's rumored that it's Obama, but I think it goes higher up the food chain than even Obama. But it's, I don't think Biden was controlling this country. Certainly Kamala was not. And whoever was in control, they want to maintain and continue that control. And they control media. And that's how you go from her being never having won a single vote in any primary ever and being one of the least effective vice presidents, least popular vice presidents in our country's history, to within 2 weeks, she's now leading in the polls. So that's the power of our media. It really is.
But Have you eaten anything?
Yes, what?
Oh, well, then maybe I shouldn't tell you, because what I got to tell you, I don't want to tell you on a full stomach.
No, no, it's okay. You're talking about the polls.
Talking about worse than the polls.
It keeps us going. It keeps us out there.
I'm talking about PSYOPs. I watched the movie Gia last night.
Right. Yeah.
Throughout the day yesterday. So I'm on Max, which is, you know, HBO Max. All right. That's where I could get the movie for free.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm watching it, and they put a promo on. The first live Kamala and
Tim Walz
and Walz interview is on Max.
Right.
What the? Come on now. You don't sound surprised. I was kind of surprised that
they're not credible. They're not independent.
Well, they're not credible. They're not independent.
HBO, Netflix, they're not independent.
But they consider that entertaining. That's not entertaining.
Yes. Yeah, no, it is. They are wholly owned by globalists. You realize that book publishing, all of Hollywood, all print media, all broadcast media are owned by about half a dozen corporations. Their agenda permeates us at every level. I'm surprised. Yesterday I was at a tactical civics meeting or event, and they played Brandon Straka's video that's on X. Anybody can find it. Brandon is the guy that had this group called Walk Away, which I think he started in late 2017, maybe 2018. Okay, so the video goes on for about 8 minutes, and it's excellent in that every word is carefully chosen and crafted to describe what the hell the Democrat Party is doing. Walk away refers to walking away from the Democrat Party because they have essentially walked away from us. And I've said this before, I was a lifelong Democrat. So I understand. In fact, I had some communications with Brandon back in 2018. And one of the criticisms I have of the guy is that there were themes that now our reality that are kind of smacking us right between the eyes. And back then, Brandon said, oh, we can't say that. That's too harsh. And I said, well, we better start saying it because it's reality. And no, you don't want to be offending anybody. It was too harsh, which I think is always a mistake, by the way. We need to start talking about what's going on before we end up like England, where it's now illegal for them to talk about what's going on. They waited 10 years. They let a problem grow and fester and spread like a virulent cancer, and now you can be arrested for talking about your point of view about what's going on in that country.
You know, let's talk about shot yourself in the foot.
I do consistently. That's why they hurt.
The Great Britain. I thought, you know, when Britain was a colonial power, mm-hmm. all right, when they were a great colonial power, everyone, and this goes for France as well,
yeah.
The Queen's subjects in that far off land or something that they were occupying, their colony.
The colonies. Right.
Were considered subjects of the Queen and were considered Englishmen. All right. India is a perfect example where, you know, they really raped the resources of India. But every Indian was an Englishman, you know, so supposedly. And that's great. But boy, did that bite them in the butt now with with all the immigration into England from what was once their colonies. And
yeah, but one of my dearest friends, when we were showing competitively, the top breeder, all breed in India, top exhibitor breeder, very wealthy guy, kid, actually a young man, he was one of our backers, and he was a good friend. And they are good businessmen. His family were excellent businessmen. They understand British colonial power and how it impacted their country, and they have they've successfully strategized around it. And then when Arthur was in medical school, you had all kinds of medical students, and you know that all across this country, that we have allowed some of their great, you know, well-trained, well-educated, bright, brilliant people into our country to be educated here. And some stay and some go back to India or whatever. But what I think is India survived very well and is flourishing. But, you know, like Charles, just today or yesterday, you know, the Queen of England survived because she never got involved in politics. Charles can't keep his dumb mouth shut. So he has an opinion about, you know, these protests in England where people are just tired of the violence that came with all of this endless, unchecked immigration. It's too much. And so there's been violence against, you know, little girls being attacked by these, whatever. There's a concern, you know. And so Charles kind of wades into it when he shouldn't and kind of takes the side of the illegal immigrants. Well, that's great because he lives behind walls with a very expensive security, and he has no clue what the, you know, how difficult housing is to find or how expensive things are. He's not paying for a loaf of bread. He doesn't do his own shopping. He doesn't, I don't think he wipes his own butt. Can I say that on radio?
Yeah, you did good.
Okay, so he needed to, you know, what made Queen Elizabeth relevant, frankly, was the generation before us and her conduct during World War II. She gave credibility to the royal family that was, even then, was pretty much slipping away, sliding away. And here's this noble young girl and her young sister who stay in England during the bombing and contribute to the war effort, and the country loved her, and that generation loved her. And then she wisely chose to stay out of politics throughout her entire life. She did not comment. And here's Charles just screwing around. And if you pay attention to Charles and William, they both support the World Economic Forum. They do. And so they're not role models for anybody at all, except maybe Bill Gates, I guess. I don't know. But I think this is the last generation where even Britons who love the monarchy will tolerate them. I don't see them surviving because there isn't that reverence for them. They don't have the relevance that she had. They enjoy a privilege that they really didn't earn and a lifestyle they really didn't earn, and it makes them irrelevant when they're talking about what's going on in the country. And then when he decides to open his mouth in a way that is so disrespectful to – it's so tone-deaf. He didn't read the room before he said this, what he says. So anyway – why are we talking about this?
Well, let me just throw something out there.
Getting back to Gia.
The royal family, they have the ability to really voice their opinion from their heart, all right, and what really should be without any fear of political ramification, because they're not elected. You know,
right.
And you would think
that's a constitutional monarchy. That gives the country stability. They see what we don't have is a moral leader. We have leadership that could change everything.
But they're not moral. They're not moral. You would think that because they're not elected, they what do you call it? They would be moral leaders. You know, but they're not. They're not.
I know they're not. And even if Queen Elizabeth was, Charles, Andrew. I'm sorry. They're not. They're just not. And then Prince Harry is, God only knows what that guy's doing. He's got another book that's going to come out, but I think he's played the drug-addled victim. I think he's taken it as far as he can go, and I think his little scheming wife, who's trying to monetize absolutely everything, I don't think the American public cares anything about him. And if it wasn't that they had this sort of PR contract with their public relations people to get stories planted, you know, they have like a contract with the New York Post, you know, when Sunshine Sachs represented them, my understanding from friends I have at the New York Post that they had a contract so that they would once a month or once a week or whatever, they had to publish a story about Harry and Meghan in order to have access to a better celebrity that they wanted to. And so that's sort of the calculation that magazines like People Magazine or whatever make, is that they create these people as popular. They sort of create the interest because they're on the cover of everything. But if you ask anybody in your community if they know what Harry and Meghan are doing or if they care, the answer is hell no. We don't care at all. They're totally irrelevant. So, but that's the whole royal family right now. There's not one, you know, I care that Kate survived cancer. But beyond that, she's not a role model for anything at all. And neither is William at all. And neither are their children at all. And so I think that they've blown their wad. Let me put that a better way. I think their relevance is over completely. I don't see George being coronated at all. I don't see him ascending to the throne. I'd be surprised if William, in his coronation, wants something much streamed down from what his father had, because it's ridiculous. Frankly, it's that pageantry. It's good for tourism. I get that. And I do agree constitutional monarchy is a great thing because they have the form of government that is responsive to the people, but they have the monarchs that could be a stabilizing force because they don't change. And they could be the moral authority. And actually, Queen Elizabeth had that moral authority. There's nobody on the globe that had more moral authority than she had, but she never really used it. She was very cautious and very, very sort of reluctant to overreach or to use the power that she had. She's one of those few leaders where when she spoke, you listened, but she didn't speak often and she didn't use that power. She certainly didn't abuse that power. But Charles doesn't have that authority. He's not her. He's not remotely her. William isn't her and never will be. And neither will George or any of the others. They're almost caricatures. So I could see them being on the way out. But listen, here's a study that was done this morning. I think this is funny. I don't know why. But if you go on X, there's a channel called Sudden and Unexpected. And there's this research that came out of Denmark. And what they're finding is that sperm is refusing to swim. In fact, the little sperm, they're just paddling around in circles, and then they're tying themselves in knots. And this is, they notice this is the sperm of vaccinated people.
Get out of town. Really?
No, really. In fact, I can play this. Just a second. I don't know if your audience can hear this, but listen.
Vaccinated men around the world who thought they had escaped from outside events are waking up to bad news this week. As groundbreaking research reveals, their sperm is behaving in ways doctors have never seen before. According to new research, vaccinated sperm is refusing to swim and instead ties itself into knots.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Okay, is that funny?
Yeah, it's not funny.
Well, they're saying that women, vaccinated women's eggs aren't maturing, they're not maturing.
I know what those little sperm are saying.
I'm not playing.
I don't want to be here.
I feel the same way, I have to tell you. I understand how they feel. It just made me laugh that, you know, because they're supposed to, if you watch the video goes on and it shows, you know that there's this fabulous film of the sperm going directly toward, you know, it's like a race. It's like the start of the Kentucky Derby. They go right to the egg and impregnate the egg. And it's just incredible film footage that we can see that. We've been able to see that for a quarter of a century now, of course. But anyway, but to say that they're refusing to do that, I don't know. It just seems so perfect, sort of emblematic of what we're experiencing.
That's what you call it. That's crazy. That's crazy.
So you watch this movie Gia. Now Gia is not new. What made you?
It came on. It's a 1998 movie. The reason I watched it was because I was watching something on Angelina Jolie, and it was supposed to be, you know, one of her better movies.
I think she was
powerful.
It's really
a good movie, and it goes back to that same thing. If we see people around us self-destructing, and listen, she didn't self-delete herself. She died of AIDS, but it was her lifestyle that led up to her contracting AIDS and going out that way, you know. Crazy.
Especially when the real Gia was such a beautiful, you would think that she would have had a lot to live for, and she had a path forward that could have given her financial security.
Well, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things. You know, a lot of people, and it's easy for us to say because we haven't, I know I haven't, and I don't think at this stage of life you aren't mega, mega wealthy where, you know, our biggest problem is who's going to comb our hair or you know, or do something.
I don't envision that exactly.
No,
but I am not ruling out that I'm going to get one of those Bering Explorer yachts.
Yeah, but we've never been.
But the thing is, there's nowhere to anchor it.
Yeah, right. We've never been in that position. But when people attain that kind of wealth, how they handle it? I mean, who's really overcome a whole bunch of adversity and handles it really, really well? Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, no, he's never captured my attention.
Listen to the tragedies in his life. He grew up poor, supposedly, broken family, all this stuff, right? Grew up in Montreal. He had a girlfriend, who gave birth to a stillborn child. She, a month later, died in an automobile accident. His best friend was River Phoenix, who died of a drug overdose. And he's low key. Matter of fact, a lot of his movies for two reasons. Number one, to promote, you know, to fund a better movie, he's reduced his salaries. And then
he gives away a lot of stuff to charity.
Yeah, he's a big time philanthropist for children's causes. So yeah. I mean, he's a guy that's low key. Oh, and he loves motorcycles, man. He's
good man.
Yeah, he's gonna go out. He's gonna go out on a bike, man. But anyway,
well, everybody's gonna go on. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
That's why you should take the bike, put it on velvet, inside a plexiglass box in your living room, and admire it, and take the box off and polish up the chrome every once in a while, but do not ride that boat or that bike on the street. It's just a matter of time before somebody doesn't see you and smashes into you.
Listen, don't even say that because
I have
a couple of bikes.
And, but you have British bikes or you have Japanese?
Well, no, as a matter of fact, I've had Japanese bikes all my life. I've had a couple of British bikes here and there. But right now, I have an Italian motorcycle. But anyway, my daughter rides religiously. I mean, she, during the...
It's like riding a horse, except that it doesn't get tired, but it does run out of gas.
Yeah,
I get it. I mean,
yeah.
I get the freedom of it.
Yeah.
And there's some roads. There's some roads in this country that are just graded perfectly for a bike.
Yeah, and there's some roads that'll get you killed. But all that being said, no, there's a...
Yes.
Yeah, shit. I said, $25 in the can.
Whoops.
Yeah. But anyway, what else? This, man. Oh, you know what I want to tell you? I'm so damn excited. You know, with this thing with me, with the radio, started out just playing around a little bit. It's turned into a damn job. What I got to do? What I got to do so far today is I got to look at. I told you I got to look at a comedy guy for the place here, but I have some dates for Jim Kask to address the book club.
I was going to say, you know, Jim. So you and I have done True Crime in the Low Country with Jim Kask for about 6 weeks now.
And
the book, this Juror 785, because
I gotta throw something out there though for you. I mean,
what?
Now, there's two dates. I got a date in late September and a date in October. I'm gonna recommend that he take the date in October. Reason being is the people in this book club, I would say a majority of them, it's 8 o'clock. Hold on. Remember this, the people in the book club. All right. You're listening to WVFF 97.7 LPFM, and this is The First Cup with Elaine and Frank. And just to repeat, in case you missed it, it's WVFF 97.7 LPFM. All right. These folks at the, what do you call it? These folks at the book club?
Book club.
All right. They don't read. They listen to audiobooks. So I'm suggesting that that we announce that he's going to appear in October,
and yes, also but give everybody a chance to get the audio of the book.
Yeah, I hate like hell to promote somebody else's stuff other than Jim's, but we have. I'm going to have to.
I think Keaton Tucker, your audience knows her. She does the podcast, The Impact of Influence. Yeah. I talked to Jim about this yesterday. I don't know that she's done the whole book, but at least she's done part of the book.
But she's behind a paywall, right?
Is she what?
Behind a paywall?
I think that this might be behind. It's an Apple. You can go follow her on X or DM me on X, and on Super Woke News on X, and I'll put you in contact with Seton. Very approachable. She's got a huge following on YouTube, close to 50,000 people. She's done this podcast. Her partner, I think his name is Matt. I think his last name is Harris. He was in the radio business. So they do good, you know, they do good quality productions of whatever it is they do. My understanding is she has done the audio. I've seen advertisements for it. But, you know, you and Seton and Jim and Jim Griffin, Dick Karpootlian, and are some of the few people on the planet that have seen the book, that have the book. My understanding is you have a copy. I don't even have a copy. But here's the deal. There's been a lot of criticism of the people that are invested in this narrative. They don't like being proven wrong. They're going to Jim, you know, with all guns blazing. And, you know, they're so nasty and so vicious about attacking the book. They haven't read the book. It's not even out. In fact, I looked last night before I went off to my meeting, and it still wasn't yet. He's had a little bit of trouble with the barcoding, so it's not quite available on Amazon yet. I didn't check this morning, but any minute now it will be available to buy on Amazon. But it hasn't been. So people criticizing the book, they don't, you know, like Eric Bland is real critical of the book.
I have both books.
Yeah, you do. You do.
Do you want me to send? Will you read it if I send you one?
I absolutely will. Yes.
All right. Do you want the first one or the second one?
I own the first one. I'd like the second one. I just want to read it.
I'll send you the second one.
I love about Jim is he's recently redone some of, you know, he's on TikTok. He's got, I don't know, 70,000 followers on TikTok, maybe more. I don't really follow it, but he's got a big following. And the first book was a bestseller on Amazon. And it's self-published. So he's just a great role model for getting out there and getting things done. And I really admire that about him. But so he had these two videos. I think they're new, but it's basically the same information he had before, but he just kind of redid it. So he has them on TikTok. So and it's basically he's talking about things we've talked about on for 6 weeks on True Crime in the Low Country with Crime and Cask and Elaine Greenwood and you know we're all three of us have been doing these, and so first video he puts on TikTok gets about 286,000 views, probably got more today, and then the second one he did has over 880,000 views on TikTok. So that's a huge audience that loves Jim Cask. You know, he's got people that hate his guts like anybody does. But he's got people that love him, and I'm a big fan of his simply because he had the courage to stand up against that tidal wave and say, this isn't right. And, you know, I've made content the same way on YouTube and on Rumble. Some of my content is still on Rumble. And when I go and look at what the content we made on Rumble, it stands the test of time. We had it right. And we were pushing against mainstream. Now, I don't mind doing that. It's been something I think I've sort of done since I was a little embryo, you know. So I don't mind pushing against the mainstream narrative at all. But I know it's not always easy, and I admire Jim for doing it. But he's going to be really successful. And you and I know that he's got another book in him. But so anyway, so yesterday, Jim had made a rather long post that he put on X. And you can find it if you follow Jim S. Crime and Cask on X. And so he sent it to me, and we were talking about it, and I said, you know, this is really well written. And so I said something to him that is not insulting, it wasn't meant to be insulting, but I said, did you use AI? He said, yes. He said, I consider it like spell check or grammar check or anything else. It's a tool. I use it. AI didn't create the story. I have to do the legwork. I have to do the research. I have to understand it. I have to write the framework. But yes, I can use AI to improve the quality of my writing. And he really has. It's great.
It's his second book. The second book is written better than the first?
Very much so. I believe so. Yes, very much so. The first book, there were a lot of metaphors in the book. A lot. But Jim knows that. He knows I've said that. So I would almost call it the illegal use of metaphors. You know, there were a lot. You know, but that's okay, because the thing is, he did the research nobody else did. He's boots on the ground. He's been there. He's done it. All these other people, every other book combined, they didn't do the actual research that he did. What they do is parrot each other. They parrot the same narrative that's already out there. Jim stands alone, and this Juror 785, Jim is just the ghostwriter for that book. He's giving Myra Crosby credit for writing the book. It's her book. It's why he's not doing media about it, because it's her story. So he doesn't want to be sitting there having some interviewer say, well, Jim, why did she do X, Y, or Z? He wants to say, let her tell you. Let it come from her mouth. It's her story, which I think is right. It's credible. It's a good deal.
Being a ghostwriter is perfect, because really, really, I mean, there's some stuff in the second book, and I haven't written it. I haven't read it. But I think there's some stuff that's controversial, and he can, if he just ghost wrote it, he can isolate himself from that controversy.
I'm curious to see what that is. My understanding is that it was reviewed. Right. In fact, I think Dick Harpootlian wrote the foreword, one of the forewords in the book, and it's been reviewed by.
All right. I'm sending, you want the book to come to the house or the P.O. box?
The house? The P.O. box is over, so the house.
Oh, no. All right. I'll send it to the house. Yeah.
Because I don't need the P.O. box.
I'll try and send the book out today.
What?
I'll send you the second book today.
I love it.
Because I haven't read the first one.
I love it. And I haven't been able to find it yet on Amazon. No. But I encourage everybody else to go out to Amazon and buy it. Yeah. But anyway, here's the deal. I had a friend who was claiming that he was writing this story. And I got to know the friend rather well, and I understood his phraseology and how he spoke. And we had a relationship where I listened a lot to how he used the English language. But he's telling me that he's writing this story. And I would say to the friend, are you sure you didn't use AI? I said, did you actually write this? You know, I just wanted, what I like about Jim is when I said, did you use AI? He said, yes, of course. And so I said to this friend, did you write this? And he's like, yeah. I said, are you sure? Are you sure? You know, and the honest answer would have been, heck no. This is an AI-generated thing. And, you know, you can tell, I think AI, to a degree, is going to put journalism out of business, because you could punch in a bunch of facts and AI generate the story, and so you don't need a lot of professional writers. I don't think that's a good thing.
I think when AI gets to the point where AI is doing the research, that's a problem, but AI writing the text, I don't see as an issue.
Because it's the same. You can. It's easy to read. It flows. There still are errors in it, but it's clean. I have to say that it's clean. But sometimes we like the imperfections. Shakespeare wasn't perfect, and I don't. You know, I would love to see an AI voice try to read Shakespeare properly. I think that'd be funny to listen to. But there are nuances in writing. You know, my mother's generation, my mother was a published author and very successful. She was an excellent writer. And she would be horrified at AI. But AI couldn't compete with how she wrote, and they couldn't compete with her expertise. She was a world-renowned expert on her little subject matter. And so that's not in danger. But I could definitely see a publication using AI to convey news just as well as, and without some of the built-in bias and emotion. I mean, it'd be really easy to say, stop using that phrase, stop repeating that phrase. You know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's an apparent thing. And you can tell when you're reading an AI-generated article. But so I was thinking that journalists have to be thinking, holy cow, we have a credibility problem with the American public because they rightly understand how, you know, how much what we produce is just pure propaganda. And now we have to compete against a machine that can think a trillion zillion times faster than us, you know, ongoingly. I mean, we will not, our brain cannot keep up with this program at all. And so they're kind of screwed. It's time to fall back on your second career, which is, I think, heating and air or auto mechanics, either one. Those are good fields. Or work for the post office. You get retirement, you got a 401k program problem. Anyway, that's my little...
Yeah, you're killing me.
I'm trying.
Nah, and listen, you're right. There's certain things... I need a damn a co-op student for what do you call it as an intern.
Good luck with that. You need a kid that could help you. A tech. You need some little.
I need a tech to edit, yeah. and master recordings. I mean, it's stuff that you know. I.
So how'd that go? Because we were looking.
Well, I'm still looking. And I dropped the ball a little bit, but. I gotta get it started because every day, I mean, this radio station is growing exponentially. And here's a for instance, I mean, as we're talking here, I'm making a hit list. I gotta set up Jim with the book club. All right, set him up on the second date. I gotta secure that date. Right, I have to get access to the audio book because I know these people aren't going to read it. So then I'll have Jim come in October. Then
okay, well, I'll give you when we get offline. I'll give you Seton's number. You talk to her and she can set you up with it.
Yeah, then
you'll like Seton. She's just a nice person.
I will. And then I got a, what do you call it? I'm doing a book. He's doing a book signing. All right.
Yeah.
So
here's something. I just went to Jim's. X page, and he says here, Juror 785, who is actually Myra Crosby, would like me to post this for anyone looking for an interview for her new Murdoch book, Because Enough is Enough. If you like and agree with this sign, we're accepting the request. And it says, there's a bottle of Dufusky rum and a sign that says, interviews, nice people only. It's kind of cute. It's just set up. But I guess that she
the
is
Fusky,
not interested.
Dufusky rum. Where did the Fusky rum come from?
I don't know, but it's a cute bottle.
It's a cute bottle. I go to the Fusky distillery. As a matter of fact,
they were running the blockade with the
rum. Yeah. But I bought a bottle of bourbon. Their best, oh my God. This like if my wife found out what I paid for this bottle of bourbon, she would brain me.
She won't listen to this, so right. You're safe.
Yeah, and it's sealed. It's staying sealed. It's for a special occasion or a gift or something, you know. But
it's
anyway,
who's on the picture? Who's that guy in the picture?
There's nobody on the picture on the bourbon. I don't think.
On the rum there is.
Yeah, but I can get that rum whenever we want because we have people running back and forth to the Fusky, but. Yeah, no, I gotta set Jimmy up with this book signing. Now I gotta tell you, I don't know who's gonna do the book signing, Myra Crosby or Jim or both of them. You know,
well, it'd be fantastic to get them both. I think she's a very nice lady. I think she's also not interested in a combative interview, and to the degree that it gets combative, she's gonna say no. You know, she felt sort of targeted anyway. Media just attacked her because we could make this big joke about the eggs. And she talks about that like, I think it came up in our conversation a while ago. But at the time, somebody had brought in fresh eggs, for everybody on the jury. And they were in the back room, and everybody had their dozen of eggs, or everybody that wanted eggs had a dozen of these farm-fresh eggs. And at the time, it was a big deal, just in those few weeks, that eggs had just shot up in price, and they were like $8 a dozen. And so she says, that's why I wanted the eggs. I didn't realize that that one comment would, you know, circle the globe a couple times and forever stigmatize me as some idiot that thinks that that was the important takeaway from the trial.
What's Jim's site on X?
Yeah, it's Crime and Cask. And you'll recognize him. Jim plays with these graphics. I love doing that. He's always changing up his graphics. Jim is very good about marketing. And I like that about him. He's, you know, if you talk to him, he's doing something. He's very active. He does not let, you know, grass grow between his feet. He's out there every day doing something. And, you know, that's a really healthy way to be. It's really good.
Well, I got to tell you something. Jim and I have, what do you call it? We have, and you, I mean, I think this is the troika. We're all knowing that we have a limited time.
Yes.
On Earth.
Yes.
We're all driven to do things that we want to do, you know?
And I think we've seen that not, if you have a regret, it's that you didn't act. I don't regret acting. I sometimes regret that I didn't act sooner, or I didn't. The other thing I think people regret, it's not a regret, but you don't know what to do. You know, like at this tactical civics hearing, a meeting, whatever, that I attended last night, I tell you, this is the nicest group of people you're ever going to want and you could ever know. And it's wonderful. You must feel this from time to time, where you walk into a crowd and you know you instantly have an affinity for everybody in the room. You can talk to any of them. You have you have this basic love of our country, love of Almighty God, and a concern for the direction of our country. And you can kind of take it from there. And these people, you can look at tacticalcivics.com and figure out what the group is about. I am not a member, and I'm not paid to promote them. But I've come to love these people, and I enjoy their companionship. And so we had a meeting, and they had a guest speaker, and then we all went to dinner and just talked and talked and talked. But it's just wonderful to be out with people where you have these common themes or interests or core beliefs, and it just makes everything so enjoyable. And I was thinking, as the evening was over and I'd come home, I thought, what's so nice about that is that, especially after COVID, we don't interact with each other that much, and we don't have these groups where you're not afraid to express any opinion. You're not afraid to say what you think and be who you are. There's this commonality of purpose or of interest or of fundamental core beliefs. And it's really enjoyable. And, you know, I think that for that reason alone, you might want to consider joining Tactical Civics, and maybe you actually are also, invested in their purpose, which is, I think.
You know how we talk about, how we were just talking about things that we want to do, and we just do them, and our plates are full because of a limited time.
Yeah.
On the other hand, how many things have people, other people, got us involved in, all right, and we've spent time on that have no value?
I've pushed, you know, I have ghostwritten for a lot of people, for military officers and politicians and attorneys and whatever. And so I've put, to write for somebody else, not about somebody else, that's different, but to write for them, you have to put a lot into understanding how they think and understanding how they would express an idea. It's just a thankless job. It's not something I enjoy doing, but I've often been roped into doing it. And it's something I kind of absolutely hate doing and don't want to do anymore, but I certainly can. And so, I put a lot of energy into being second banana for a lot of politicians or people with ambition, whatever the ambition was, powerful people, successful people with ambition. And looking back, you learn something from it. I don't regret doing it, but pretty much it was a colossal waste of time. You know, it's not a, it's kind of a thankless thing, you know, Yeah, it really actually is. And then to see somebody else take credit for your work product, it gets to be galling after a while. So I am much more selective, and I'm very comfortable saying, no, I'm not going to do that. No. In fact, I almost said no. Yesterday there was a computer glitch in a program I have to fulfill, something I was required to do by law, and there was a computer glitch, and I thought, well, okay. So not my fault that there is this software problem, and this will give me the opportunity to opt out of this thing that I'm kind of equivocal about doing. Anyway, and I'm very aware at my age that I'm not so sure I want to go full tilt if I don't see the strategy for doing that. I want to see an end result that's good.
Let me tell you, adopt hedonism a little bit. Don't do it if you're not going to like it.
Very much. And not something, I don't know if it's because I'm Catholic or because my parents were, I don't know what, but that doesn't come easily to me. Being altruistic does. And altruism is a trait that nature selects against. So it's not something I would ever encourage anyone to be at all, because you have to be much more self-serving. And it's okay. It's healthy. It's the right thing to do. But that took me a long time to figure out, too. If I could do it again, I would be probably more reckless, more impulsive. I don't know.
No. Listen, on the other hand, you living like you did, you made it to this grand old age, all right? Had you adopted another lifestyle?
Mm-hmm. That'd be a different
person. We might be talking to you about, like Gia.
Mm-hmm. Sure. No. Actually, Tucker Carlson has an interview with this German scientist who's talking about the COVID vaccines and how they actually interfere with cognition. They interfere with the chemical process in your brain, and they destroy your memory. You know, our physical well-being, our emotional well-being is anchored in our memory, actually. Our memory gives us comfort. And so when we have this spike protein that destroys the hippocampus or some part of how we create and maintain our memory, and that actually was a feature of the vaccine, that what we're doing is we're making people that are much more fearful, they're more isolated, and they're frankly more neurotic. And so, and one of the phenomena that they've seen around the world is that after COVID, especially with vaccinated people, they're isolated, they're fearful, they don't want to interact anymore. They're just not emotionally very healthy people.
Well, here's the question, I think that requires an incredible, incredible amount of scrutiny, and I'll tell you why. Are these traits that that people had, and that's why they were vaxxed? Or is this a product?
No, we're talking about the biochemical process in the
brain. Well,
brains.
I mean, unless they can measure the behavior, you can measure, all right? Correlate the biochemical reaction to that behavior is the issue. All right.
No, but there's studies that go back to, he's written a book, and you can see that the Tucker Carlson interview is on X too. You see the clip. It's only about 8 minutes. And so he's got he's talking about studies that go back to about 2000, 2001, where they noticed that these MNR vaccines are quite much, much older than we realized. They were not developed for COVID at all. Okay, so there's research about what these MNRA spike proteins do in the human brain and how they interfere with the human brain. And one of the claims he makes is that they could have produced a COVID vaccine without the MNRA spike part of it. They could have used another part that was much safer, equally as effective, without any MNRA spike protein at all. And they chose not to. They chose to use this mechanism that they knew would interfere with frankly, our emotional happiness, our sense of happiness. Because his point is that if you have a population, if you want to conquer the world, you can use force, but that's bloody and it's expensive and it's drawn out and it just doesn't work. Or you can destroy people chemically. And that's what this vaccine was about. That's basically his takeaway. I just summed it up so you don't even have to watch Tucker Carlson's interview. But it's interesting. I'm not advocating. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm not advocating that it's more or less right than anything else. But he's actually, you know, he can cite the studies, the research, the Nobel Prize-winning research that forms the basis of his opinion, and he has some credentials. He's a German from, you know, whatever. Interesting guy, just a point of view. I didn't get vaccinated. I don't intend to be vaccinated. I am not vaccinated, and so there you have it.
Well, you know, we make limited trips into Walterboro, and we try and. You know, it accomplishes as many things as we can when we make that 20-mile trip. And
sure.
I got a, what do you call it? I got a notice from CVS that, I can get my my most recent booster, most recent COVID booster, and my, what do you call it, and my flu shot at the same time. So I got the text from them, and I copied the text and I sent it to Kimber, and she said, why did you send me this? I said, well, you know, when we go into Walterboro, we're trying to accomplish as many things as we can. I said, if you go to CVS, just go through the drive-thru and stick your arm out when you pass and pick this up for me. Oh, man. Yeah.
You know, my feeling is there's enough information out there for you to make an informed decision. I simply want the right to make the informed decision that I've made based on my life experience and education. And I'm not going to interfere with somebody else's right. If they want to do whatever, that's fine. Just keep it to yourself. Don't make me pay a price because of your choices.
I know this isn't one of your weak points, but
yes.
Would you be able to keep this conversation going beyond a half an hour, beyond 8:30?
Yes.
You know why? Because it's 8:26, and our master, the engineer who's going to cut this off, is not in the control room. Oh my God! so we might be live for the rest of the day. Oh, is he there? Oh, he is there. I just couldn't see him. All right. We're back on schedule. We're back on schedule for 8:30. I didn't see him in the control room, and I thought that we were going to have to carry this on for the next 24 hours, perhaps, you know.
And, a little marathon. You know, we did a live stream once that went on for 5 hours. And the thing was, we had this attorney that was talking about the impact of being doxxed. And she was very compelling, and she talked 4 hours, but... And then lawyer Lori, who's got something like, I don't know, 900,000 followers on TikTok. She's probably known to the audience here. She called in. And so she started talking. And then somebody else that had some expertise about being doxxed called in, and they started talking. So it was a very interesting conversation. The audience just picked up after 5 hours. But we had to say it's enough, you know. So, yes, could I do it? Yes. Would I like to do it? Not so much, really.
Oh, Elaine, you'd love it. It's 8:28, so we got 2 minutes now.
So what are you doing this weekend?
Well, I'm probably going to do the boat thing a little bit, but my biggest question is, do you want to broadcast on Labor Day?
Absolutely, if you want to. It's up to you. Yeah,
all right, I'm gonna try and set up the remote when we're done here. If the remote goes successfully, we'll broadcast on Labor Day morning and on Tuesday morning, because those two mornings I won't be able to be in the studio. But if I can do it remotely, I'd be happy to have it on.
So what we're saying to the audience is we may be here Monday or Tuesday and we may not.
We may be here Monday, Tuesday, and we may not. But whatever the case is, have a wonderful, wonderful Labor Day. Labor Day being, the official end of summer, and I guess it's like a celebration to I never really understood what Labor Day was. To celebrate your labor or your work or your pursuit through the year.
I don't know.
It sounds like an excuse for a party.
I thought it celebrated labor unions, but I never really thought a lot about it. It was a benchmark. It means, oh damn, summer's over. And now you can't. It used to mean you can't wear white after Labor Day. Remember?
Yeah, right.
Now I think nobody cares. I have no idea. But anyway, we're at 8:29, and that means we get to wrap this thing up with a bow, so take it away.
Yeah. All righty, this is Elaine and Frank, and you've been listening to The First Cup. I hope what? Red Bull. Red